Kia ora, everybody. Welcome along to the Shortboard Rugby Pass podcast. Scotty Stevenson and Mills Mulyaina in the hot seat today. What? You're in a t-shirt and shorts.
It is. It's hot, mate.
It's not hot. I'm in a what could best be described as a flasher jacket and a woolen beanie and jeans and socks and shoes.
Well, I feel hot. I've actually been babysitting, so that's probably why I'm running around.
Babysitting what?
Well, a baby.
You're not babysitting. You're the father of this child. There's a difference. Oh. You're parenting. It's not babysitting.
Yeah, true. I'll take that back.
You can't say that.
I take that back.
That's a wife killer. That when you say things like that, it's a partner killer.
She's going to hear this too.
I know. She's going, I'm babysitting. Oh. You're not babysitting. You made that baby.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Yours. You've got to father the child.
True that.
Your father.
And I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Did you?
You that's probably why I'm hot, you know.
You did not.
I'm surprised I haven't got spew or anything on me.
Reflux?
Yeah. No.
You or the baby? I've seen you with reflux. It's not a good sight.
Hey, happy birthday, anyway.
That was yesterday, mate, but thanks all the same. Yeah. I noticed
a year and a day old.
Yeah, that's right. Another year and a day older. I know. I feel about 10 days.
What'd you get?
For my birthday?
Yeah.
I got nothing.
Well, do you get to a certain age now? How does it happen? Like, get to a certain age and then the presents stop?
Look, to be honest, there's nothing I need. So I just say to people, my loved ones, my children, my partner, I say, I don't need a present. Don't give me anything.
Oh, hell of a man, aren't you?
Well, no, it's just because I don't need more stuff.
Yeah, I'm hearing you.
Like, if you want to give me a birthday present, allow me to go have beers with my mate.
Yeah.
For 3 hours when you haven't booked a PTA meeting and then I have to go home and get shot in the nuts with Nerf guns. I did too. You've got a boy. Kids always try and shoot you in the nuts. And my kid's got those mega Nerf guns, those mega bullets. If you point blank and that cops you right on the edge of a testicle, that's punishment anyway. We need to talk about a bit of rugby. We've got producer Alice with us as well. Hi, producer Alice.
Hi. Hi, Scotty and Mills.
Hey.
Hey, producer Alice. Sonny Bill comes back this week. Are you excited?
Nah. I mean, yeah, sure. I mean, I'm not excited.
So you're not excited, but you're not excited either. So you're ambivalent.
Yeah.
I can't believe you're ambivalent. It's Sonny Bill Williams. Aren't we all supposed to shout from the rooftops? All hail the great man. He returns. The hero is back.
I'm looking forward to him being back. Alice probably doesn't because she's a Highlanders fan.
No, that's true.
So they didn't play too well in the weekend.
Are you not a fan of Sonny Bill, producer Alice?
Again, not a fan. Just not... I don't know. There's a lot of hype.
We're going to come back to producer Alice with more searching questions through this. This has disturbed me, Alice. I thought, you know, you're right in the wheelhouse. You're in the generational wheelhouse that loves Sonny Bill. You know, the generation above ours can't stand him. Our generation are the ambivalent ones. You guys are supposed to be all in on this guy.
Maybe I've just, creeped into your generation on this one.
She's crept in. I was talking to producer Alice before. I only realised that her best friend, I knew when her best friend was a baby. We've just put two and two together. This is a New Zealand scenario here because everyone is only separated by 2 degrees in New Zealand, right? So Alice's best friend, I sort of last saw when the child was born. And that's 20 years ago. It's ridiculous. Yeah. I'm so old right now. Speaking of old, Highlanders looked old against the Sharks.
Yeah.
Didn't they? They looked old man, Highlanders.
Yeah, it's weird. I've sort of was thinking about it on the way here. Just like, how does that happen? You know, when you're over there, and I've been on the back end of a few of those over in South Africa. They just did not seem like the Highlanders that we've seen in the last sort of 3 or 4 weeks, did they? I mean, the Sharks did play some really good running rugby, and we thought that, you know, both teams would actually sort of, it was a game of, a kicking chicken, as you sort of explained it last week.
There'd be a lot more of that, yeah.
But they were just in all sorts.
Jeff Wilson was saying that he thinks that factor of coming down from altitude to sea level can actually take quite a lot out of you. I hadn't really considered that. But having lived in South Africa, I know that it's certainly when you go up to altitude, it can knock you around. But have you ever felt that coming the other way if you play in Joburg or Loftus and then head down to Durban or Cape Town? Is that a factor?
That's probably a good point. I've never actually thought about it that way, but I have sort of felt, you know, a few times when we've been over there that you've been really lethargic. You know, you've gone sort of to sea level and one of those sort of hot sunny days that you don't actually feel like playing and you just kind of like just want to lie down and get slaughtered, and that's kind of what happened, really.
They did a lot of surfing in a wave pool. Did you see that?
Is it? Oh, okay.
On your Sosh Med, there was a lot of wave. There was a wave pool.
Is that still there? The one in the mall?
I guess it is.
No.
They're right into it.
Wow.
Too much surfing?
Possibly.
It was always going to happen. The Highlanders were always going to reach a point where they hit the wall.
Yeah. Well, they've tackled a lot. And
damn straight they had.
Throughout the whole season. And it was just a matter of time as to when they're actually going to sort of start feeling some of that fatigue. Because they hit some hard, you know, they hit pretty hard. And so, you know, perhaps, you know, this is the game before they, where they got the Stormers next?
Highlanders got the Lions at Forsyth Bar. We'll talk about that game coming up as well. But, you know, that's going to be no easy feat because they're going to have big ball runners at them again. Mm. Even though their home park's a bit of a fortress and you wouldn't bet against them at Forsyth Bar. But, yeah, I was going through their numbers. You know, rugby union, the ball's in play around about 36 minutes per game. I know, which seems not a lot in an 80-minute game, but that's sort of time and possession. And opposition teams against the Highlanders are in possession for 19.5 minutes per game, whereas the Highlanders are in possession 13 minutes a game. You're giving away a lot of time where you're on the back foot there or where you're defending. I'm not saying it's a game plan that doesn't work, because it does work for them. Mm. But, you know, almost 20 minutes a side in possession against you, that is a lot of ball that other sides have to play with. Now, they rely on those teams making mistakes. But when those teams don't make mistakes, that's when surely the bet does not pay off.
Yeah, and I think now we're at the time of the season where, you know, other teams are starting to cotton onto it. So they're going to, you know, give the ball away, make sure you hold on to possession and don't give it back to them, because that's when they pounce on it. And so there's a little bit of that, well, I suppose, analysing. But you're right. I think, you know, because they've sort of defended a heck of a lot over the season, they now need to sort of try and balance that up a bit. And it would be amazing what like 5 or so minutes can actually make to an attacking. And then that's points. If you're getting points and things like that, well, you just grow in confidence. And so perhaps now they've actually looked at it and think they need to balance your game up a little bit.
Look, Millsy, before we get ahead to the week coming up, the weekend ahead, let's have a look back at some of the other results from the weekend. The Crusaders, far too good for the Rebels. I felt for the Rebels, actually, because that was just an onslaught in the second half and they had nothing left to give, and Will Guinea going off certainly didn't help their cause.
No.
But let's turn our attention to the big news on this side of the Tasman, at least, was the Blues beating the Waratahs. How? I've got no idea. But, gee, they hung on. That was so brave.
It was.
Yeah, I don't know if you watched the game. I was sitting in the bar of the Ridges Hotel in Wellington. So I am deep in Hurricanes territory here. And the game started, you know, 20 to 10 New Zealand time. And a lot of people were in the bar watching on the big screen. They were cheering for the Blues, man.
Were they?
I've never seen anything like it. Now, I know it's the sympathy shag approach. Yep. You know, they feel sorry for them. They're going to cheer them all the way and double down on that with the whole New Zealanders want to see Australian teams get beat. Mm-hmm. But I've never seen anything like it. They were cheering for them. They were living every moment. It was an intense game. I seriously at one point thought about going and sniffing glue just to get through it.
Well, they started well. I mean, they started with that early try, but I think it was – they were courageous at the end because, you know, they're only up by 3 and they needed to defend for, 4 or so minutes.
It felt like an age.
Yeah, and they did that. And so, and perhaps people felt that, you know, the record doesn't, it was not really a record, is it? They didn't really want another news.
It's a streak.
It's a streak.
38 games. I think that's bordering on a record.
Exactly. And if there was going to be any team, given the way they've sort of gone in the last few weeks, that was going to lose against an Australian team, it would be the Blues. But credit to them, they did. They held on. And as I said, they were very courageous in the end.
They were. They were courageous in the end. And finally, we've got to talk about Ben Lamb. I get it. I know, and I wrote about it this week on Rugby Pass. I get that you've got Waisaki Nohalo, and I get you've got Rico Ioane, and I get Nehi Milne-Scudder's coming back from injury, and I get the fact that Geordie Barrett's going to be in the mix and Ben Smith's going to be in the mix, and I know that Damien McKenzie's probably going to be in the mix on the bench because he covers 10 and 15. I get all of that. But he's a 27-year-old winger from the Hurricanes who is on a try-scoring tear like never before in the competition, and he's scoring tries that many other wingers could not score.
Yeah.
And I know that there's a lot of guys in front of him, and I know it's hard to leapfrog an incumbent All Black.
Mm.
But please do not tell me, and I don't know where these things start, I don't know how they start, but they certainly get picked up on, they certainly get reported. Do not tell me about his defensive deficiencies and his uncertainty under high balls. The guy's a freak.
Oh, he's having a sensational year. Absolutely sensational. And, like, I think the try that he scored when the ball went backwards and he had two guys on him
right.
and he sort of just brushed them off as if they were just little kids. I mean, that sort of epitomises what he's been, how he's been playing this year. And so it's disappointing when people are looking at his, well, the reasons as to why he's not being put in that squad. You know, he's a little bit unlucky because he's so many good wingers at the moment and then so many other guys that are covering different positions. But don't knock him for the deficiencies he has in his game because he certainly doesn't. He's a try-scoring machine.
I haven't seen them. I don't know what deficiencies these people speak of. They say he's not that great on defence. He's got a better tackling rate than pretty much any other winger ahead of him in the pecking order.
Yeah, the tackling rate is good. Obviously, you'd like to see him a little bit more under a bit more pressure and how he connects with his centres and things like that. And that's probably the only thing, only because we haven't seen enough. But in terms of his tackle rate, it's sensational.
Okay, well, here's another question for you, right? If the reason, and I'm not saying that these words have come out of Steve Hansen's mouth or Ian Foster's mouth or Grant Fox's mouth, whatever, but if the reason that he doesn't make the team is because he has some perceived deficiencies, aren't these the best coaches in the game?
Yeah.
Aren't these the people who can knock the bad habits? I read a column from Gregor Paul last week saying the All Blacks can't wait to get the bad habits out of Akita Ioane's game. Aren't these the coaches who make players better? So aren't they the coaches who could make Ben Lamb even better than he is now, given the history of the All Blacks and what these coaching staff believe they can do with any player in their group?
Oh, they can. You're absolutely right. They can. And at the moment, I can go back to my point. There are so many good wingers out there, and that's the biggest issue. And you know, there's people saying, you know, put him out there against the French. Don't put him out there against the French. I think at the end of the day, you know, the biggest issue at the moment is there's so much competition in that position. And do you put him out there and say, well, we're going to make you better? Well, I mean, that's probably disrespectful to the guys that are the incumbents.
And by the way, let's be clear, I'm not calling for anyone to be dropped because all of those players have done a good job. The only thing that strikes me as unfair on Ben Lamb is the chatter around why he won't be in the All Blacks. I think he won't be in the All Blacks because there's just a hell of a lot of good players in front of him right now. But I just think to then sort of assassinate his ability by way of justification, I think is wrong.
Yeah.
I think that's the wrong bet. I'm not saying put him in the All Blacks immediately. I'm just saying don't denigrate the guy's game.
Yeah.
He's absolutely, in any other time, in any other scenario, he's in that team.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't understand why we do that. As you know, I mean, you've got a guy here who is just carving things to shreds.
Yeah, he's great to watch.
Why not celebrate that instead of sort of looking, that's why he's not in there. Oh, dear, that's why he's not in there. Matt, he's just in an awkward situation at the moment. There's so many good wingers there, and who do you pick from?
It's a good point you make. Hey, Mills, you know what I love doing most on this podcast?
What's that?
It's calling Jay Staunton. I'm going to call him right now. Hopefully he answers the phone, because here's a guy who knows his Aussie rugby. We need to discuss things.
Hello, Scott.
Hello, J-Boy. How are you?
Same shit, different smell. How about you?
Yeah, pretty much the same, mate. So you're live on the short ball today with Millsy and I, J-Boar, host of Pillar to Post. And J-Boar, I believe you popped your commentary cherry on the weekend. Play-by-play caller in the Queensland Cup, was it?
Yeah, it was actually good. I actually nailed it. I didn't swear once. So I've got to be happy about that.
It's actually a miracle for you. Let's get on with the real talk. How did the Waratahs not get that first win over New Zealand sides in 700 years on the weekend?
I've got absolutely no idea. It was a pretty insipid performance. I mean, the Blues didn't play that well at all. And that's the perplexing thing is that, you know, we consistently see Australian teams, not just the Tars, show that on their day they've got the cattle to get the job done. But there seems to be this almost undercurrent of poor decision-making, you know, lack of discipline, things like that throughout not just, you know, New South Wales rugby, but all Aussie teams. And it shows when you've got low-hanging fruit like the Blues ready to be picked off and they can't get the job done.
Yeah, it was a strange old night, I guess made even stranger by the fact that here's one of your linchpins, Kirtley Beale, going for the hero play to Israel Folau late in the game where it just didn't need to happen. I mean, that's a crazy call from Kirtley Beale at a crucial stage.
Out of all the plays you could have possibly done at that stage, that is by far the most low percentage. Apparently he said that he saw Yucko Piper telling the Blues players to get back on side and had his arm out and, you know, misinterpreted that as advantage. But, you know, you got to be more game aware to be able to ice teams than, you know, doing that. So who knows? It's one of those things. It's hard to just put your finger on any one issue, it seems, at the moment. Mm.
Hey, just on the Waratahs, Izzy Folau, obviously they like playing him a bit on the wing, but his partner, his wife, Maria Folau, Nii Tuataia, she doesn't like that. So she's now tweeting at the Waratahs about where they should be playing Israel. I know you're still a single man, and I find that hard to believe, but how would you feel if your midi came in on social media and started telling your coaches where to pick you on a footy team?
I don't know. It'd actually be pretty good to have someone backing me up for once. I know my parents never do. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, it'd be a bit strange. Do you really think that's something that, you know, your partner or something should be getting involved in? You know, like, I mean, all credit to her. She's more than welcome to say what she wants to say. But at the end of the day, it's Darryl Gibson's decision to put him on the sting. And if he wants to put him there, then so be it. But it's not his best position. But, you know, if that's the way the Tars want to play it, then so be it, you know.
Jay Boy, you're a year in now from what happened last year, a disastrous sort of, I suppose, Australian conference. Where's everything at the moment? You've called your first sort of game in the weekend. You know, there was a lot of talk about all the franchises coming together and being on the same page. And then, you know, in the weekend, you still have guys making bad decisions. And I think, you know, of all of this, you know, perhaps the Rebels and the Reds have sort of come out sort of on top as the two sort of, I suppose, dominant teams in the Australian conference. Would that be the way you see it?
Yeah, it's hard to say because every team seems to just play a different brand of footy week in, week out. We saw a couple of weeks ago the Reds absolutely took it to the Lions in that first half and showed the type of footy that Brad Thorne is obviously trying to get out there, and it shows that, again, the cattle is there to be able to play this type of footy, but it just seems it's a bit of a work in progress. So I think that's what it is. There is this overlapping idea that, you know, teams want to start playing a bit more expansive and stuff like that. I think it's just right now the game as a whole seems to play this negative brand of footy and trying to, you know, eradicate that and change it up to this up-tempo style seems to only be something that comes out for 30 or 40 minutes in a game of footy instead of 60, 70, 80 that's needed, you know. So I think it's clearly something that's changing, but I think there's still a bit of a ways off, obviously evidenced by the fact that 38 games on the trot, we haven't been able to get one up over the Kiwi team, so... Yeah.
That's a real ball ache for Australians, isn't it? I mean, I know there's been some columns written over there accusing New Zealand's rugby media of being smug about this winning record. I don't know if it's smugness, mate. I mean, it's actually bewilderment. I don't think many people here can actually truly comprehend going 38 straight games against Australian teams. I mean, I don't think it's good for New Zealand rugby. It's no good for Super Rugby. It can't be great for you blokes. But, I mean, is this the most dire ball-ache in your game right now, this Kiwi hoodoo?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, to say that it's smugness on the Kiwi media's behalf is a bit short-sighted when it's literally just stating the cold, hard facts. Yeah. I mean, you said it yourself. We've got media pundits over here nitpicking and bringing it up every friggin' day, you know. So what's the difference between them doing so and the New Zealand media doing so? I mean, that's exactly what it is, right? It's the cold, hard light of day. That's the bare-bones truth, that we haven't been able to defeat a Kiwi side in 38 matches, and that's not good enough. And as you said, it's not good for the game. If all these reports of the South African teams pulling out after the TV deal goes ahead, you know, what's to say the Kiwis want to be playing just against Australian sides and kicking the living piss out of them week in, week out? So it's something that needs to be rectified, and I think the Blues are probably the best shot of any team doing it, so hopefully we can get one up over them.
Yeah, I hope so too, mate. Apart from that, mate, club footy going good?
Yeah, it's absolutely thriving. That's the strange thing, you know. You go down to your local footy game and it's absolutely pumping, actually. The game I called on the weekend was South versus Bond Uni, one versus, I think, last. Quay Cooper wasn't playing, Richard Kingy wasn't playing, and there was still, you know, a couple thousand maybe down there all supporting it. So, I mean, it's still absolutely humming. It just seems that disconnect between professional and amateur seems to be lacking a bit. But yeah, you can't deny the absolute love and tribalism of a club game.
Perfect, mate. Always good to talk to you, Jay Boar. We'll chat soon again, mate. And good luck cool on your footy this weekend as well, buddy.
Cheers, brother. Later, soon, mate. Later, Milsey.
See you, mate.
See you, buddy. Jay Boar Staunton out of Australia, host of the Pillar to Post podcast. There has been the talking point this week about whether South Africa will look to go, whether they will stay. We've spoken about it before. We need South Africa here.
Oh, yeah.
The Southern Hemisphere needs to be absolutely 100% bonded together. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing Twiggy Forrest's Rebel League starting up with the Western Force trying to gain some traction in the Pacific Islands. I swear we're going to miss a trick there unless we bring them into the fold here in Super Rugby. When I say we, you know, the official Sanzar tournament.
Yeah.
A lot of talk about going into America. Milsey, you've had an experience with pro rugby, which was a flop, but Major League Rugby now looks like it may be getting some traction. Mm. You know, look, it's all very well to start looking at expansion, but you have to have unification down here.
Yeah.
It is the only way. And I fear that South Africa will do its own thing at some stage. And if not, all of the franchises or clubs, some of them, will want to split away. They will see the pounds, they will see the time zone, they will see the sponsorship opportunities, and they will take that opportunity if it's presented to them. I don't think we can stop that in the current format. We need to look at more exciting ways to say what is going to work best for Southern Hemisphere rugby.
Yeah, exactly, Suma. And they've been harping on it for a few years. You know, you're right, the time zones fit them. I suppose the TV rights and what they can get out of it is, you know, a lot more than what they've been getting over the years. And so I think one day they will branch off. They're obviously not going to get the same quality. And you're seeing it in you know, the Pro 14 now. You know, the teams that they've gone over, the Cheetahs and the Kings, you know, they've performed, you know, poorly. And so they won't get the same. But you're right, we've actually got to start looking now at where to actually grow the game. Possibly Argentina with the way the Jaguares are going at the moment, and that's massive. And so America, in like you say, I think that league that's going now, there's actually some, you know, some good substance there, and Crusaders have gotten on board as well. So we need to start looking, because we need to be really strong down here. Otherwise, we're just going to get a two-nation sort of league, you know, us and Australia, and you know, that can't be very strong.
Okay, so... And I know it's not going to be a popular view with New Zealand rugby, but is Super Rugby at a point where we just have to say Sanzar is not an organisation with the best interests of Super Rugby in mind? It is an organisation that fronts for the best interests of its member unions. And the best interests of its member unions are the Wallabies, the Springboks and the All Blacks. Mm. And yes, I know Argentina's a part of it, but the Jaguares is basically the Pumas, so they get around it that way. Do we see a point where we say, you know what, play Super Rugby, play for any team in Super Rugby and still be eligible for your national side? Do we get to that point where we say, let's open this labour market up, because we keep hearing that the challenges are there and they're not going away from a monetary point of view? What if the Lions were to say to a Waisaka Naholo, we'll pay you $2 million New Zealand dollars a year to play for the Lions? What if someone was to say to Malcolm Marks, here, we'll pay you $2 million New Zealand dollars to play for the Highlanders or for the Crusaders? What if that were to happen? Would that make the competition better? Forget everything that's gone before. Yeah. Forget the protection racket around, you know, protecting your All Blacks and the New Zealand way. Just, is it a possibility?
I suppose there's two points here, okay? From where we're sitting in New Zealand, our game is sort of never, you know, there's been a couple of times where we perhaps haven't performed, but in terms of where we are as a country and where our rugby is, we're absolutely at the top of our game. And so when you look at the partners, they're the ones that have been struggling. You know, South Africa have struggled. You know, obviously they're being enticed to go to Europe. Our neighbours are probably struggling the most. And so, from a selfish point of view, in terms of our brand and in the way we're playing, I wouldn't like it to be sort of opened up. But unfortunately, you know, to save it, that might have to be the way.
But you put the Wallabies together, right? And they're a chance against the All Blacks. They have had their wins.
Mm.
While their Super Rugby teams haven't, they certainly have had their wins, the Wallabies. You put the same with the Springboks. They've had their moments against the All Blacks. I know the All Blacks have been that dominant side, and it will only be a matter of time before Argentina has its moment in the sun as well, just as the Hawaris have on this tour. But what I'm saying to you is that that's about the All Blacks, the Wallabies, the Springboks and the Pumas. It's got nothing to do with Super Rugby. If you want people involved in rugby, they want teams that are winning. And if you want teams that are winning, Australia cannot supply at the moment the depth of talent required to have winning rugby teams. South Africa has been absolutely eviscerated by the European market, and they're struggling too. And New Zealand sits pretty at the moment, but what happens if it runs out of people to play with? It's all very well have the best sandpit, but it's pretty boring after a while digging your own hole.
No, it is. The problem we'll end up having, and I can if it gets to that stage, I think New Zealand would hinder New Zealand rugby big time, because the teams that you're why we're so strong is there's a lot of IP that comes together in those five teams. When they come into the All Blacks, you know, they're sharing. You know, they're sharing different defensive systems that they've tried in their franchises and things like that. Now, if you're mixing everything up now, all of a sudden, you know, yes, it'll make the South Africans and the Australians better and it would possibly make the competition better. But then people are going to have to accept the fact that Australia and South Africa and every other nation are now going to start beating New Zealand more often than what they are at the moment. Are you happy with that? I wouldn't be.
So, okay, and therein lies the rub, right? Yeah. The international game still takes precedence over your 18-week competition. Full stop.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is, and we have to all accept that.
Well, no. I mean, you have to have a competition, but what I'm saying is I wouldn't like it to go that way. So they've got to find a different way.
I know what you're saying. I mean, I'm having this argument. It's just hypothetical. I'm trying to think of ways here where you can say to South Africans, don't go to Europe. You don't have to leave.
Yeah.
We can find the money here in a different style of competition where you spread the talent across the four or five countries involved and the teams all, hopefully, get better and more competitive because of it.
And that'd be the way to fix it. That would be the way to fix your 18-week competition. All I'm saying is, when it's going to come to the international stuff every 4 years,
you're going to have to expect.
we're going to lose a bit more.
Do you want the All Blacks to lose, Alice?
Do I want the All Blacks to lose? No.
Good. That's just a trick question. Just making sure.
Making sure I'm loyal to
We've had a good discussion about loyalty before, didn't we, Alice?
Before the podcast started.
You're doing the 48-hour film festival this weekend. Yep. You may have to make a short movie in 48 hours.
Yes.
And what did you do with your team last year? You just gassed them.
Look, I've moved on to a very good team that has won.
Gassed.
Well, no, she just said to her team, you're no chance. I'm going to go and I'm going to join the winning team. That's what Alice has done.
Similar to what you're just talking about.
That's exactly what I'm just talking about. She's spreading. Well, she's not actually spreading the talent. She's obviously got ability, but she just thinks she's with a team of duds. So she's gone on to people who can win.
People who can use my talent in a better way.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
This is loyalty. Alice doesn't want the All Blacks to lose. She doesn't want her old team to lose, but she just wants to win. She wants a better product.
Yeah.
And get better.
Yeah. Sure.
It's metaphorical. I'm using this as an allegorical reference to what we're talking about.
Yeah, true.
Can we move on to this week?
Yeah.
Because we're going to run out of time on the short ball today because, we are jibber-jabbering. I want to talk about the Blues taking on the Hurricanes. Sonny Bill's back.
Yep.
Alice is not excited about that. I'm quite excited about that. Sonny Bill returns. TJ Pettinato returns for the Hurricanes. Two big guns. Okay, Millsy. What is the more important inclusion? Is it Sonny Bill into the Blues? Is it TJ back for the Hurricanes?
Oh, it's Sonny Bill for me. It's definitely Sonny Bill. He'll bring that stability, enthusiasm, and you know, and Sonny Bill's known to bring that X factor. And so with TJ coming back, well, he's coming back into a team that's functioning very, very well. They've got a lot of depth, and they're playing some pretty, you know, some good brand of football, and they've got a lot of X factor. So for me, it has to be Sonny Bill coming back. Also nice to see that Ofa Tuongafasi's re-signed.
He has, and back as well.
Yeah,
back this week. Ofa's signed through to 2021. That's a big signing for New Zealand rugby and for the Blues. So you're picking Sonny as the more important inclusion in this team. I think they'll be happy to have him back. Orby Ledger will enjoy having Sonny Bill Williams, I think, on his six. And also Caleb Clark, who made his debut last week, looks really good. Rico moves back to the wing.
Yeah.
A lot of people will be thrilled about that.
Yeah.
Albeit he moves to the right wing, not the left. And you got Duffman at fullback. So that back line's starting to look a lot more balanced, perhaps.
Yeah.
Stephen Pettle-Fetter, you get another run. I mean, he is obviously now the Blues' number one guy. With Ortiz out for the season, Bryn Gatlin can't buy a start and can't buy a bench spot either at the moment. And he's announced he's going to the Highlanders. But Stephen Pidolfetta, what did you make of his game over the last couple of weeks? And can he make a difference with his running game against the Hurricanes?
Oh, I think he can make a bit of a difference in terms of his running. What I've made of him is that I spoke to you before this. I think he just needs another sort of, you know, a season or so at the back to appreciate it a bit more. There's no doubt he's got talent. He can snipe a little wee gap. He's got nice footwork, but just appreciate the fact that you can sit at the back and sort of have confidence to have a go. When you're in that 10 position, you know, you've all of a sudden your game has to change a bit. You've got to try and run better lines. You've got to set up your forwards. I mean, you're seeing at the moment with Damian McKenzie, and I think, you know, that real X factor is sort of, you know, starting to lose a little bit like that, because he has to now appreciate what's around him. And there's so much pressure in that 10 position. But he's gone well. He will make a difference. But he's going to be put under a bit different, you know, a bit more pressure against this Hurricanes back.
I mean, it's a big assignment for the Blues up against a team that's on an absolute tear at the moment. And I just don't know if the Blues defence is going to handle what the Hurricanes do. You know, we were putting some clips together this week, Millsy, about just how they shorten up defensive lines on either side. They're so involved as a team in their attacking structure. Mm. And invariably they'll go side to side, but every time they do, it's 7-on-3 or 8-on-4.
Yeah.
Just their ability to bamboozle defensive lines, and everyone then knowing their job, whether they're just dummy running, whether they're out the back, whether they're in the second line, it's an impressive situation.
Oh, but not just knowing their roles, but also being able to, the awareness to say, well, do I need to take it a step further, or do I need to just hang back a bit before I pass that ball, square someone up? And Batesy brought it up last week in our Show the Team talk. Usually teams, you know, actually exhaust that far side, go past the 15 metre, so then they can get back into shape. Well, this Hurricanes team doesn't need that. You know, they don't even go to the 15, well past the 15. They come back and all of a sudden they've got numbers, which is a really strange thing.
I know. I don't understand how they do it. It's just a natural inclination for them to be involved in the next phase of attack. And the Blues, I know we've talked about, will be happy of that win over the Waratahs because it was gutsy, but I think they're just going to need a bit more guts and a bit more structure than guts probably against the Hurricanes. One Blue to talk about who certainly looked the goods last week was Dalton Papa. I saw this kid playing college rugby for St Kent's, and you could see that if he put his mind to it, he was going to go places. I know that people are very interested in where he gets to, but you know, that was a grind out, make your tackles, cover ass performance from a young kid in the 7 jersey.
Yeah, and you said it, a real young kid that's sort of going out there and doing the real sort of grafting work, the hard stuff that you perhaps when you're in a struggling team that think, oh, I won't quite get to that. And so I've been impressed with him as well. And to be totally honest, the first time I seen him was at the 10s and sort of what he can bring. He'll fill out a little bit. And this is, I kind of mentioned it last week in the pod here, that this is what the Blues need. They need a, well, don't kind of forget about the season. They'll go out there and they'll play hard and for each other and things like that. But now start working the likes of the Papali'is, the Ofatuanga Fussies, who's staying on board, and let's start building this culture, whatever culture they're going to bring up, and have them really back at foot for the next year or
so. Build your spine, right?
Build it, yeah.
Let's say here's a 5-year deal. We're going to build our spine around this player, this player, this player. I think Tanner sees that.
Yeah.
I think the Blues see it now as well. I mean, they're not going to give up trying for the rest of the year, but I agree with you. Put these guys in there and say, we're going to back you.
Yeah.
We are going to back you as our long-term guy. And instead of chopping and changing each week, the Highlanders come home to face the Lions. The Lions will be without Malcolm Marks, who blew out a hammy, which is a real shame for the Lions. In fact, I pretty much single-handedly cost them the game, if you ask me. But this is a really crucial game for the Lions. They're top of the South African Conference. If they don't get points here, things get really squeezed up for them. Mm. The Stormers are going to back themselves over the Chiefs in Cape Town. If the Lions go down, the Stormers win, that becomes a really intense last 4 games in the South African Conference. The Waratahs are up against it against the Crusaders, and they're only a few points clear of the Rebs. If the Rebs get up over the Brumbies, then they suddenly put pressure on them. And the Crusaders, too, top of the New Zealand Conference, but they've got the Hurricanes breathing down their neck. Yeah. They've got a game in hand. So every top team in every conference this week has a really big assignment to make sure you get, if not 4, if not 5 points, and certainly get your 4.
Yeah. So when you say that now, Sumo, is that a success then? Like, I looked at the South African conference and I thought, okay, the Bulls are looking really strong. They go then, they get dealt to by the Stormers, the Sharks and what they did, you know, also the Australian conference, you know. So everyone within that conference is no real sort of an out-and-out sort of strong team. So are we saying that Super Rugby is kind of a success?
Well, yeah, but it would be if you look at the combined conference. New Zealand's still got four teams in the and all the wildcard spots.
Yeah,
that's the problem. It's not that there's no lack of competition within the conference. It's just whenever these teams get out of their conference, it all starts falling apart.
Yeah.
So they can't pick up, you know, the sort of extra conference matches, and that's what makes it all inflated from a New Zealand point of view, because they back the Kiwi teams to go and get their points against the Australians, against the South Africans.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I mean, it's become more and more even, I think, across that South African and Australian conferences, and it will be the same again this weekend. But, you know, you say that, are you picking the Waratahs to beat the Crusaders?
No.
Are you picking the Lions to beat the Highlanders?
Oh, no. But
are you putting a button there?
Well, they don't have to travel. They would have gone to Queenstown. Well, Alice is not.
Alice is not happy.
Oh, okay, she's not happy.
Alice is not happy.
I don't think they. Well, they don't have to go. They don't have to go from when they're not travelling from South Africa. They would have spent a couple of days in probably Queenstown and relaxed a little bit. The Highlanders have got to come all the way back. Yes, it's nice to get back to your family, but you know, no, I don't see them. It'll be closer than what people think, though.
I'm fine with that. A win's a win. Mills is our in-house oracle. He's proven that up until this point. So as long as he says it's a win, doesn't matter how many points by.
Okay. You're the in-house oracle, are you?
I don't know how.
We were getting stung. We got burnt the other day. We've been making some shitty tips on this podcast. Was that me?
I
been making shitty tips?
I don't know. I went out pretty good the first few rounds, and I think that's what's given me the heads up.
A guy's come at me on Twitter the other day. It's probably too late to find it, but he's really annoyed. He's calling this the short ball curse.
What?
Apparently we're making dud calls all over.
Who's he supporting?
I don't know who he's supporting, but he's really come at me. He's come at me hard.
Oh,
I don't
I'm
know
glad
if
I'm
he's
not
come
on
at
Twitter.
You or oh, if he's come
he's
at
he's probably coming at me.
No, I don't know if he is, but it was crazy. I didn't realise we were making that many dud calls. I thought we were getting it right every single week. But obviously, no, I can't find this bloke. He was right into it too. It's a I don't like being a curse. I don't mind being wrong, but a curse.
No way.
That's no good.
We're not a curse. I've caught a few right. I'm the oracle.
Yeah. You are full of shit, Mel. Been a pleasure to be with you though, mate.
Likewise, my friend.
Mm. Good luck with your weekend's tips, everybody. They're probably better than our curse. And good luck to the Highlanders, Alice. I'm sure they'll
go
right.
Thank you so much.
I thought the Lions were going to pip the Hurricanes last week. I did actually probably say that.
Well, there you go. Yeah. There it is. That's where it comes from.
That was a dud call. Sorry about that. Right. It's been a short ball for another week. Don't forget to check out rugbypass.com for all your news, views, columns and video content. And, of course, all the games live throughout Asia on the Rugby Pass platform. Laters.